is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
You're listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Next on News for the Soul, it's time for the Not Too Late Show with Miche Meisner. Miche is an inspirational humorist, an alchemical wizard, and a healer's healer. Gifted with psychic abilities, sharp insight, loving nature, and lots of study, she brings light to the planet through multiple modalities. Get ready for today's wisdom and woo. Here's Miche.
Welcome to the Not Too Late Show, where it's never too late to step into your power, to express your gift, or discover your genius. And when you activate that in yourself, you actually are shifting the planet. I'm your host, Miche Meisner. I'm a coach and mentor for spiritual development and personal transformation. Deborah A. is back as my guest for the second time today. She is a leadership mentor and creator of the Global Village Campus. And here's a little bit of her bio. Having grown up on three different continents and observed the universal human trait of bias, Deborah A. learned at an early age to let go of the idea of normal. A natural born disruptor, she'd struggled for decades to find her place. A former minister and engineer turned holistic leadership mentor, she understands from the inside out the challenges leaders face trying to follow rules that ultimately are just plain unhealthy for humans. She's on a mission to help leaders free themselves of restrictive rules and boundaries so they can make the impact they are here to make their way. Deborah currently lives in sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and enjoys consuming copious amounts of green juice and chocolate, taking long treks in the desert, and learning from her 9-year-old daughter. Welcome, Deborah A. Good to have you back.
Thank you, Miche. It's nice to be here. Sorry. I just want to make sure I had quiet.
Yeah, good. All right. Good deal. We hear you. So, so even though you were on before, I figure people are listening who did not necessarily listen to that. Just give us a little bit more background maybe about, you know, what life was like growing up and how you came to doing the work that you're doing. And it doesn't really mention this in here, but one of the ways that we connected was that, you know, you've not only got sort of the engineer side, but you got a little bit of woo in you too. So maybe talk about how that works into your work and your perspective.
Okay, well, thank you. Real quick, I was raised a minister's daughter. I grew up in ministry and in religion and Christianity. Moved to Papua New Guinea when I was, 11 when I moved to Papua New Guinea, all the way over in the South Pacific near Australia, and lived there for 4 years. My parents were missionaries there. And I just started to, you know, at an early age, I just knew something was different about me. I didn't know what. I tried to follow the rules. I tried to be a good girl, a good submissive Christian woman. But it just, like, the harder I tried, it was like the worse I got at it. And one day, I know it was over time, but basically I had a realization that I was like, you know, I'm trying really hard to fit into these rules and I'm really struggling with it. Let me take a look around and see if there's anybody who I can use like as a role model. And I looked around and I was like, I don't really want to be like any of these people. Huh? So then I was kind of like with that for a while. And I was like, you know, I don't know that I should be worried so much about this, because at the end of the day, I don't see this as like the end destination isn't actually as appealing when I really got to look at it. And so that's what started me down the path of taking a little bit of a divergent, you know, trail. And so there is very much a deep, my father was incredibly spiritual and man of faith. And so I learned a lot of faith and trust from him. And then I you know, also he was also an engineer, and so I wanted to do engineering, so I kind of took that in school. But even in school, like, I was in engineering, which was in the sciences, and then I was in architecture as well, the double major, and architecture was with the arts, and they were literally on opposite sides of campus. And it was so, you know, like, it was such a great metaphor for the way that I was. Like, I had so many different, like, supposedly opposing parts to me, but they were all equally, you know, powerful. So, I mean, nowadays I have language to describe it. Back then I didn't, but I just knew that there was more to me than, you know, one organization or one institution or one group could fill. So I went, you know, grew up in life traveling and kind of bouncing around from place to place, never really feeling like I belonged anywhere. And, you know, finally more recently, just learning how I belonged to the planet and humanity and to myself. So yeah, it's been a really fun journey. I hope that answered your question. Tell me if I missed anything.
Yeah, no, that was great. You know, it had me thinking, you know, I had just in terms of the feeling like I don't fit in, not certainly not the missionary or traveling part, you know, but I always felt like I didn't fit in, and I kept trying to fit in until finally I realized, you know, I was thinking that I was doing a really bad job of being myself, but really what was happening is I was doing a really bad job of being someone else. And so
yes,
when I took on finally, right, to just be myself, I'm doing pretty good. I mean, you know, challenges, whatever, of course, but, you know, I fit quite nicely in my own skin as opposed to trying to fit in someone else's. And so, you know, I think a lot of our listeners too, you know, struggle with that, right? We're a little bit offbeat. We're off the, you know, beaten path. We're odd, maybe. We're woo-woo. We're, you know, just different. And it, as long as we think we need to be like someone else, certainly like the norm, it's going to hurt, you know, trying to fit that mold. But here at the Not Too Late Show, we, you know, encourage people to really be exactly who you are, be the youest you that you can be. So I'm glad you found your way.
Yes, me too.
Yeah. So when you were on the first time, you were just sort of like on the cusp of having some new epiphanies or taking on some new focus, shifting how you were doing things or what you were doing. And it was a mystery because it was still a mystery to you. And
yes,
so I'm curious, you know, where have you landed so far anyway? And what's happened? Or, you know, I mean, you need to blow by blow, but like, where have you come out? What are you up to?
Well, thank you for asking. It has been such a blessing. It has been amazing. It's still unfolding, but I can definitely say that I have some clarity, and it's so much bigger than I could have ever imagined. So it's funny. Somebody just asked me not too long ago, how did you start, you know, your business? And I said, well, I thought I was just going to make a few quick bucks doing some life coaching for like a year and then take the money and go do this other business. Oh, how little I knew. And as I went into the first year of life coaching and made $0 and 0 cents, I was like, okay, this isn't quite looking the way I wanted it to. But, you know, I kept going, and I decided to focus on relationships and specifically on, you know, emotionally toxic relationships, marriages that were on the brink of divorce. And I never worked with a couple. I always worked with just one individual. It was just cleaner for me that way. And I was able to help all of those people turn their marriages around. And I had two exceptions. But yeah, it was really amazing to see that transformation. But what was even more interesting was to see that the ones that I helped that were business owners, I saw them not only improve their relationships, their marriages, but also improve things with their businesses, their employees, and then they had better relationships. They had more trust, more relatability between them. They were able to expand their business because they were able to delegate more and trust things more and make partnerships and serendipitous, you know, opportunities that before they were missing. And so I started to say, there's something to this, because we didn't talk anything about their business, but they would share with me all these wins. And so I started to look into leadership a little bit more, because with relationship, I felt like once people got that hit, they were back into a better relationship with their partner. Like, they lost the urgency or the drive to continue doing the work. And I, to me, that was like, that's the first step. It just gets juicier after that. So I wanted to go deeper. I wanted to have a higher, you know, reach. So I started working with leaders. I had a beta program that I did in 2019 and then another one in 2020. And each time I just learned so much. And so what I've come to see, believe it or not, drum roll here, is that one of the major highest ways that I can be of service to humanity is actually helping to end poverty. So I know it's not a one-woman task, but it's definitely my focus. And it's amazing because all the tools that seem to be completely separate from this goal of ending world poverty actually are very much connected. I'm even still learning the connections myself, and it blows my mind every day to be a part of this, but it's just things have fallen into my lap and things have happened to help me to see that this is the direction that I'm going in. In the meantime, I still have this toolkit that I've been blessed and given to share, and I've learned from so many other teachers as well. So I really enjoy the work now of helping leaders to free themselves from restrictions, from rules, from unnecessary boundaries, so they can be the most of most service to humanity, and so they can really help to build trust as a bottom line in their companies and in their communities. It's a huge theme around freedom is trust. And so that's what I'm working on right now, and that's kind of the direction that my work is going in the big picture.
Okay. And when you I have too many things in my mind at the moment. One is, on the leadership, I, for one, am a solopreneur, and I think a lot of my people maybe are as well. But that doesn't mean that we're not leaders, right? I mean, because when you say leadership, I think of like a company or an organization and somebody, you know, sort of at the helm who's actually leading other people. Correct me if I'm wrong, but in our lives, we're leaders, you know, each kind of in our own lives. So would what you're teaching to organizational leaders apply also to individuals in that way?
Yeah, so that's actually an excellent question. And there are different toolkits. So as I said, I was in really working with individuals in their marriages. But then, of course, it never was just their marriage. It was also their siblings and their parents and their kids. And so there's a whole toolkit for those very intimate and delicate family relationships. Which is like, how could I explain this? Maybe like, you know, you have your basic set of Legos, but then you have like the special kits that have like like special pieces for building specific things. So, right. So like the basic Lego set applies to everyone universally. And then depending on how you want to apply it for your own set of situations, whether it's that you're a parent, a spouse, or you want to apply it to like if you're leading a community, it could be like a volunteer organization or a nonprofit, or if you have your own business, or even if you're senior management in someone else's business, then you would have a different set of specialized tools that you would use it for those specific applications. The foundational principles are always the same. They never change. But then applying it, there's some fine-tuning that we do depending on the type of relationship that it is. Because basically the way I frame things is that everything is in relationship. So whether it's a relationship with the spouse or your children or your relationship with time, your relationship with food, your relationship with money, your relationship with, you know, other people and organizations, they're just all different types of relationships. So that's kind of how I keep it really simple. And then depending on the type of relationship, we have a different, you know, set of specialized tools for fine tuning.
Okay, that makes sense. So can you tell us a little bit about the foundational tenets or, you know, some of the basics that would apply to everybody?
Yes. I mean, a simple way to look at it is that we find, organize, and then trust our answers. So in a world where, you know, no one's fault, there's no one to blame, but where basically I look at the planet as being enveloped in a blanket of fear. We're all infected by it. No one is immune to fear. No one. And so fear has a way of, when it's not detected and it's, and we're not aware of what it's doing, it has a way of, you know, making us really not act like ourselves. We act like something very different from who we actually are. And so the key is just, you know, it's like reminding ourselves and remembering, okay, I have this tool set. This isn't really who I am. This is just what we could say is conditioning. And I have my own unique answers and strategies that are unique for me, just as unique as my fingerprint. And I just got to find them, then know where to access them when I need them, and then use them and trust them. And so that's a simple way of basically being able to navigate in a world that's blanketed in fear and still not be completely consumed by it, even if though we're all at some level infected by it, but not let it consume us to the point where we're acting like someone that we're not.
Okay. What about trusting oneself?
Okay. So the whole first, so there's, like I said, the basic foundations are finding, organizing, and trusting. So all of those tools, so for finding, for example, we start out with, you know, everyone has done visioning exercises, but like, why do we even want a vision anyway? Like, what's the point of a vision? You know, we kind of go into that and understanding the emotional or the satisfaction gains from having a vision and making it happen. We look at our needs, our human needs. Every single human has basic needs that are universal, and then each individual has their own ways of meeting their needs. We look at our core values. When we look at those things, we start to find our answers. And then when we go into things like the rules that we live by, whether they're our own self-imposed rules or rules that we've accepted from others, and yes, we always accept them. We can always reject them if we want to. The beliefs that we have about ourselves and about how life is and the world is. And then the meanings that we give to things that happen. So that's like when we really start to understand what we're doing, then we can organize our answers in a way that becomes easier for us to access in different moments in time. We can access it kind of on cue. And then trusting comes back to flow. It comes back to allowing things, allowing life to kind of happen instead of always being in this. It's kind of like, you know, when you're about to crash, you lose control of your vehicle. They always say, don't look at, you know, like look at where you want to go versus where, you know, you're afraid of going. We always tend to look at where we're afraid of going and then we hit that. So it's, again, it's about learning how to look where you want to go in life, but then trusting that you don't have the control. You just don't have control. Trusting yourself also in terms of letting go of boundaries, because boundaries are always set up to protect ourselves. And I'm talking about artificial boundaries. There are always natural boundaries, and I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about artificial boundaries that we put up, rules and restrictions that we put up to protect ourselves, air quotes, being able to let those go because we trust that we can take care of our situation regardless of what comes up. And then finally, things like embracing conflicts and disagreements that people have and those areas where they're very uncomfortable, but being able to use them not as, not run from them or avoid them, but actually use them as tools to build deeper trust between people, which is one of the most fun things I have to do because it's probably one of the most radical kinds of transformations you can find is when you're able to embrace conflict. So those are the nine basic foundational pieces to finding, organizing, and then trusting your own answers. And all of that together helps you to build a much deeper level of self-trust.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot and makes sense. So the two things that, you know, seem very counterintuitive, right, to how we maybe, you know, have learned to deal with things is the first that, you know, to eliminate boundaries, right, instead of setting our boundaries. I mean, especially as women, right, people have been talking about, you know, you need to set boundaries. You need to, you know, sort of stake your territory and not let people, you know, come in or step on you or this or that. And then, of course, embracing conflict as opposed to, you know, doing everything you can to avoid conflict. So how did you, I don't know, how did you come upon that, or what are you seeing happen when people are, you know, doing it this different way, right? What does that look like? Somebody who's been trying to protect themselves with boundaries, and now you're saying, you know, release your boundaries. You know, how does that work?
Well, okay, so there's two parts. What does it look like and how does it work? I'll start with what it looks like because that's a little bit easier to describe. I have a story of a client who had a really close family member with whom she had a lot of trauma. They just had a really rocky history. And this family member was getting divorced, and both the family member and the ex-spouse were calling her and involving her in this embroiled, ugly, nasty, long-winded divorce. And she just was like, I don't want to have anything to do with it. And so she was telling me about it, and she was like, I wanted to set my boundaries and keep them. First of all, people are never really as good. Let me put it this way. When you have a heart of compassion and an empath, and I attract empaths, I'm an empath myself. When you have a very deep empathic, you know, nature tendency, we're never as good at setting boundaries as we like to think we are. It's hard for us because we feel what the other person is. You know, we feel so much. So she was like, I'm trying to set the boundaries and, you know, let them know it's not my business. Da, 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 da. And by the end of us going through these modules and working through some of these things together, she was like, first of all, I was no longer feeling any kind of tension. I knew what to tell them. I knew where to say something and where to say, hey, look, I can't really help you with that. And she was like, and they worked it out. Like somehow through her not like resisting and feeling all the stress around it, the whole situation actually resolved itself. They found a mediator and got it done. And she did almost nothing different. But what she changed was where she was. And this is one of the biggest things I speak to all the time. It's not what you do. It's where you are when you do it. Mm. And so you shift internally where you are, no longer needing protection, no longer feeling, you know, tightness around a specific situation, that situation now has the opportunity to change direction. You know, you are no longer as attractive to it because the tension isn't there. So it's really interesting how that works. And so anyway, she was so amazed that she barely did anything. I think she sent like one email and had like two conversations basically with them. And the whole energy of it died off, and they went off and left her out of it and resolved it on their own. Meanwhile, for like a year plus, they had been involving her, and she was so stressed out about it. So that's a really simple example of how it looks when it, you know, when you get this simple thing. Now, the how is a little bit more involved. So you tell me, what would you like, because I don't want to overwhelm. Tell me, what would you like me to share? I'm happy to share as little or as much as you'd like.
Right. Well, I mean, I think your example was great and kind of covered that too. You know, and it sounds like coming from that different place or perspective brought a whole different kind of energy to the situation also. So, I mean, from my perspective, I would say, you know, that would play a big part in the dynamic between like those three people, right? Okay, we actually have a caller. So let's see what happens there, shall we?
Okay, great.
Yeah, who knows what's coming. Life living itself through the radio show. Area code 630, you are on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, my name is from the Chicago.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you. Your name's what?
Oh. Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's better.
And I'm calling from the Midwest Chicagoland suburb.
All right. And do you have a question or a comment?
Well, I just got on. I don't know. Can you just, like, ask a question? Or what are we doing here?
Okay. So you called in to listen, and then we maybe accidentally thought that you wanted to talk to us? Is that what happened?
No, I mean, I'd like to ask a question, like a psychic type of question, but I don't know if you're able to do that.
Right. We're not doing, like, psychic call-in here, actually. We're talking about the ideas of trust and boundaries, or not having boundaries, living in trust. So, yeah, sorry. You know, we have had other...
Listen. That's fine.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for showing up. I appreciate you listening. Okay. So, all right. Well, so how was that for a boundary or a non-boundary or just, you know?
All good. All good. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in what you're doing and your different perspectives. So I guess rather than me try to come up with a question, maybe you could just share another story or two that stands out for you, you know, that kind of portrays the sort of changes that people experience when they're following your protocol.
Yeah, I mean... thank you for asking. I mean, there's another story that comes to mind is a client recently who actually had moved out. So thought the relationship was over, but listened to, you know, her truth, listened to what was going on internally, and realized that there was still something that she wanted to salvage in her marriage. And it was really interesting because, as you know, we've been watching the situation unfold, she's been amazed at herself. Like, she was like, yesterday, and I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, it's I feel Pretty, Amy, I can't remember her last name, but she's an amazing comedian, and she gets, you know, she gets hit on the head and she thinks she's a supermodel, and she starts acting very differently from how she normally was. It was very shy and reclusive, and so my client kind of used this story as an example to say, she's like, I don't, you know, like, I didn't even care what I looked like. I just felt pretty. I felt beautiful. And it was so amazing to see her in flow, and or at least I didn't see her, but to hear her describe her situation when she was in flow and how things have really changed in her family dynamic just from her, like, doing nothing different, but just from her just, like, allowing herself to feel in flow, allowing herself to feel her feelings, allowing herself to trust that whatever was coming through was what was supposed to come through instead of suppressing it. Now, it seems really, really simple, but it has far-reaching effects. So when families that were about to be split up reunite in a way that's actually healthy and happier, you know, think about the impact that has on their children and the next generation, and in many places, their level of self-esteem, their level of, you know, peace of mind, the level of clarity to be able to focus on their work. I mean, everything is impacted just from that small piece. But then when they take it into their work, because it never stays in one area, because it's you, you're only one person. So when you shift one area, it's going to shift the same thing as shifting a whole bunch of things, right? So when they now take it to their work and they have more empathy for people who are going through challenges and they're able to see things a little bit differently because they still have the empathy, but now they don't have to get attached to the painful story. They can stay there in a more neutral place and still show compassion and care and not judge and not feel like they have to pull away to protect their energy. What ends up happening is they're able to serve people at a much higher level. And so, I mean, I hear so many of the stories, I almost synthesize them all together because that's how my brain works. So sometimes it's hard for me to give you like super specific stories, but that is the general side effects that I see when I work with people, is they start to be able to really feel other people without all the negative, you know, energy drain and pain that they were feeling before. So they don't lose their heart. They just have more strength connected to it, more support connected to it internally. And it doesn't mean that they have no problems. It doesn't mean that everything is blissful from there on out, but it just means that they can experience their life with far less fear. They still feel fear, but the fear is less controlling of their life. They're able to enjoy it more. And because they are able to enjoy it more, what is most important to me is that then they're able to share more of themselves with others, with the world. And that's where the ripple effect occurs.
Right. That's great. And I'm thinking even on such a mundane kind of level of, you know, if you're stuck in rush hour traffic, but you're at peace in yourself, you know, you're going to act differently than, you know, people who are using rush hour traffic to take out their frustrations and, you know, to express how unhappy they are. So, you know, just changes everything when you're vibing in a different way, when you're putting out a different scenario of what life is like, because you're, you know, feel safer maybe in yourself and calmer, then you're not adding to the angst and the drama either. So I love that.
Yeah, trust and safety go hand in hand. So I'm glad that you mentioned safety, because once people trust you, then they do feel safe. They open up. They give you more honesty, so you're able to help them better. It just becomes a ripple effect, and it starts with you. So I model self-trust and vulnerability and openness for my clients, so they can see an example of how it looks, and then they can model it for others. So it becomes that cascading effect.
Yeah, great. So do you tend to work with people individually, or do group run, you know, group program?
You know, it's interesting. I've actually come to see that it's best as a hybrid. So usually I have one session that's a small group session, and one session that's individual, because there's pros and cons to both. And, you know, the work we do is deep, but it also is great when we have a little bit of community and we know that we're not the only one. And there are certain vocabulary and phrases that really only this community knows, because, you know, at least the way that we use it is very different. The way that we encourage each other is very different. The way that we support each other is very different from, you know, when we're talking with people who are not a part of this community. So yeah, there's absolutely a sense of, connectivity and camaraderie and support that comes from, you know, connecting with people who are speaking that same language of like, hey, look, we are not victims of our situation, but even more importantly, you know, we know how to trust ourselves in such a unique and special way. And here, if we trust ourselves more, we end up trusting each other more, and we keep building that. So, yeah, it's a combination of both.
Okay, I love it. Is there more you want to say about this work? Or I'm really interested, too, to hear about how any of this connects to working to end poverty, or what you're doing in that regard, or what you're learning. So if there's something else you want to say particularly about anything we've been talking about, or.
Okay.
I mean.
Yeah, well, they tie out. We live in a fractal universe, right? So everything is connected to everything. So it is connected, particularly if we go back to the idea of releasing boundaries. This is one I focus on the interpersonal side of it, because that is where I feel like it's the most misunderstood and abused. But it applies to everything. So if you think about boundaries, typically what you're thinking about is like the boundary of a country, right? Like where one country starts and the next stops, or the boundary of a state or of a city or of someone's property. All of these are boundaries. And each of them is like, keep out unless you have expressed permission from me to step onto my territory. Whereas, you know, any indigenous culture will laugh at that idea, because they know very well that there's nobody owns anything. It's all God's land. And, you know, we're just, you know, caretakers for the moment, you know, we're going to die and somebody else is going to be on it. So it's a whole different idea when you think about land and, you know, property and ownership and all that. But really interestingly enough, those boundaries are really what separate us. And they're line boundaries, but then they turn into like, you know, something like the Olympics, where it becomes patriotic thing or a nationalistic thing. You know, then it goes into like different different areas because like often, you know, like say for example, my family is from Nigeria and a lot of the boundaries there are like they're tribal, but they kind of also follow natural boundaries. So they'll follow a river or they'll follow, you know, a certain part of the patch of the forest or a clearing or, you know, something like that. So it's kind of a combination of both natural and artificial boundaries. But the thing that's really interesting about it is that, you know, then there's a boundary of culture, there's a boundary of language, there's a boundary of, you know, I don't know, hair type. There's so many different boundaries that we use to categorize, classify, because we think that makes it easier for us, our minds, to understand something on a surface level. But in truth, we understand nothing because we've already categorized somebody, so we haven't even investigated them to know anything more about them other than to put them in a box. And we all are guilty of this. I don't think there's any human being that has zero boundary setting in their brain, but it's just about really starting to be more aware of it. Because where does poverty come from? It's from, well, I'm of this class, they're of that class. I'm going to literally take, that's how it started, I'm going to take something and say that it's mine, okay? And then I'm going to make it like because they're from whatever or because they look like whatever or because they speak whatever, that's why they can't have it. It is all man-made. It's all made up. It's all artificial. But it has now created countries that are in incredible debt and other countries also in debt, but who can borrow without ever having to pay back and so on and so forth. This is really, really messed up in unequal and very kind of biased system, right, when it comes to finances for different countries and different groups. All of that goes away when everyone can just say, hey, look, we're humanity. It doesn't matter what we look right. like, what language we speak, whatever, what side of the junk we're on, we're all humans. So we all have equal everything. So, you know, I should be like, hey, if I'm a pregnant mom of twins, yeah, maybe I get a little bit more food than, you know, a small child. But it's not like 10,000 times more food. It's right. like maybe, you know, so it's like things start to make a lot more sense. And you don't have poverty when everyone understands there's really no difference, you know, and that we stop trying to create all of these separations. Then difference becomes diversity instead of becoming division. Yeah, division. So we see that diversity is a good thing. And we don't want everybody to be homogenized, but we are all equal and we're not seeing, you know, so it's like an equity really means, okay, what the person needs, they get. And if they don't need it, they, why bother? You know, so it becomes something where everyone is able to thrive and no one is, you know, in the kinds of situations that we have now. So something as simple as letting go of boundaries is a part of, and a huge part of, not the only thing, obviously, but a huge part of ending world poverty. It's a huge part of being able to bring about the kind of world that we want to see. And it's just so, like, it's just wired in me that, like, that's just something that since I was a little kid, I was just like, I don't understand why people, and I always felt this kind of feeling when people would set up boundaries towards me. And I also felt it when I tried to set up boundaries towards other people. And then I realized, I was like, you know, I don't like this feeling. I'm not going to do this anymore. So that's kind of how it started. And that's where it's headed.
Okay. So do you see, I don't know, working like in community with that, or, you know, I understand the concept and I agree with you. And it's also a pretty tall order to try to shift you know, the whole machinery, right, of separation and ownership and all of that. So where's your focus at this point in trying to, I don't know, kind of implement something?
Well, that's a great question. And I don't worry about how it's going to happen. I never worry about how. I just know my part, and my part is just to follow the breadcrumbs. I literally, that's my favorite phrase, is to follow the breadcrumbs. So right now, the breadcrumb that I'm working on is a book. I'm collaborating with someone who's also made it their mission to end world poverty, who is far more connected and has been doing this a lot longer than I have. But that's the first step, is to spread the idea, to spread the message.
Right.
It could turn into a lot of different things. I'm not worried because I know whenever that, whatever next step, it always presents itself at the right time. But the message is getting documented now, and it's getting, you know, it's going to be disseminated. That's going to be the first step, is that book. Having conversations like this, spreading the ideas, spreading the message, spreading the conversation, just having conversations about these things without having such rigid, predetermined stances on it. That right there is part of the work that I'm here to do.
Right. That's great. Well, and collaborating with another author, right, is also breaking or not having that boundary of, you know, you write your book, I write my book, and, you know, whatever. So,
yeah.
So you're living it. I didn't mean to imply that you should be, you know, out there in front with a flag or something, you know, touting the cause and changing the world all by yourself. And I do believe that one of us, right, is changing the world just by being ourselves. So,
yes.
Yeah. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Is there some, I don't know, kind of like little exercise or mini training? We have about 10-15 minutes left. And I'm wondering if there's, you know, something that you have that you can kind of walk people through to help bring about a new understanding.
Okay, so here's a really simple exercise that you can do at home. It takes just a minute. And the first part of it is to write down, what do you do to maintain your energy throughout the day? So, you know, write down maybe the top five things that you think of that you do. And it could be anything from self-care to, you know, taking a break to delegating something, anything that comes to your mind that you do to maintain. Maybe it's drinking a Red Bull, I don't know. But whatever you do to maintain your energy throughout your day.
Okay.
So that's step one. Then step two is to write down next to each of those things that you wrote in your list, on a scale of 1 to 10, how well does it work for you? And this is purely subjective. This is you to you, not for anybody else. But how well is that self-care thing or whatever it is that you're doing, how well does it work for you?
Right. I can just, you know, for myself, I'm imagining my list and I could think, you know, sort of a snarky like, yeah, and how's that working for you? You know, because a lot of the things I do are, you know, are definitely counterproductive, you know, but they become the habits or whatever where I think, you know, like eating sugar, for example, right, to get a boost. But I know I'm going to crash. So how's that working for me? Not so well. Okay, I digress. Continue.
But, you know, honestly, I'm not even trying to be snarky. It's just being raising our awareness, just even a little tiny bit, as to what we already associate with something positive, and then realizing how much of a positive it actually is. And for some things it will be a 10, and that's great, that's awesome, keep doing it. So it's cool.
I just want to clarify that I wasn't saying that you were snarky with it. That was a totally self-snarky thing, just, you know, sort of what was coming up for me in the moment. So just clear, my snark, not yours. Go ahead.
Well, I am a queen of snarky, so I have to say that for myself too, because I can be quite snarky. But yeah, and then, you know, if it is a 10, you know, then my next question is always like, what makes it a 10? Why does it work so well for you? Because again, it's like that helps you to start to see like, oh, what else could I do that has the same characteristics that could work really well for me that I'm not doing, right? And maybe that in itself can be really awesome. Like if you just take a moment to think about, well, why does that work for you? So my unbound solution, what I will always encourage people to do is to stop protecting your energy. And the reason why I say that is because your energy doesn't need protection if you understand that your true nature is to be limitless. Now, does that mean that I'm saying, you know, jump off of a tall building or, like, you know, stand in front of a car that's dry? No, I'm saying you obviously you have good sense, but you don't need to set up artificial walls, or that's what they are, artificial boundaries around your energy, because your energy is limitless. And just making that little shift of saying, hey, I don't need to protect my energy, just telling yourself that, it's amazing how far that can actually go. Why does it matter if we tell ourselves that? Well, I mean, 9 times out of 10, okay, every one of us has been hurt by people we love before. All of us have been. And 9 times out of 10, if you really look carefully as to what was the source of the reason for them hurting us, it was because they felt in some way that they needed to protect themselves. And same thing for us. There's no one who's not hurt somebody that they love. We all have. And when we look and we think about it, it's also because we wanted to protect our energy. So we're doing all kinds of hurting to each other and to ourselves, trying to protect our energy. It's a big deal. So if we can let go even just like 2% of our need to protect our energy, that 2% means we're 2% less hurtful to other people. If you want to think about it in a more literal way, like I'm just, you know, trying to give you a different angle to it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, let me ask you a clarifying question here, because we were listing out the ways that we help keep our energy up. Mm-hmm. And are you saying that those are ways that we try to protect our energy, or that's different?
No, it's related, but it is different. So one is maintaining, keeping our energy up. Yes. Thank you for clarifying. The second is what we do to keep it, like, as in protect it from any external depletion, right? So we want to protect energy, so then we're like, okay, we're going to, you know, tell everybody we don't talk to people on the weekends about work or whatever it is we do, right? And there's nothing, and there's no judgment around this, but it's just like, even if we do the same exact thing and we turn off our phones and we don't answer a call, whatever, if we just understand that our energy doesn't need protection, right there, that's like an energy boost. I don't know why, but it is. It's like, oh, well, if I don't need protection, it's like all of a sudden I actually have access to more energy. So once we do that and we recognize that what we're doing when we try to set up boundaries to protect our energy is we're just trying to meet our own needs. That's all it is. And so when we understand that we're just trying to meet our own needs, everything gets a lot easier, because now we have meeting needs is so much simpler of a situation than trying to set up protective boundaries. One has a very resistant kind of feel to it, texture, color, taste, smell, whatever you want to use. And great. One has a much more replenishing, nurturing kind of texture, smell, taste, sound to it. Okay,
right.
So,
and fluid. And fluid comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's flexible fluid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So meeting needs, you know, you think about a baby, you know, they cry when they need to be changed, or they're hungry or they're tired. You know, meeting needs is about replenishment. Setting boundaries is about resistance. So it's really just about understanding how those feel. And as someone who works in the world of optimizing for flow, I will always move towards the one that's much more fluid and less resistant. Sorry, take the path of least resistance. So here's the thing. So we have our list of the ways that we maintain our energy. We see how well they are or they aren't working for us. We kind of know why the things that work for us work as well as they do. Then the final step is to say, okay, if boundary setting is really about meeting my needs, how do I know, you know, how do I not get caught in these codependent relationships? Like if I don't set boundaries, I'll just be in this like mess of I don't know who I am and they don't know who they are and we're all, and I'm like, no, there's no need for dysfunction. All you got to know is that you do have a natural boundary. You can imagine it as like a bubble. I call it your personal boundary bubble, or PBB for short. And that is you inside of a big bubble, you can imagine around your body, and inside of that bubble, that's all yours. So that's your body, your thoughts, your emotions, your actions, and your reactions. And those are all yours. And if you want to think about it as a bubble, you could even think about it as your skin as the boundary, right? Like there's a part where you end and the next human being begins. So that's all you need when it comes to avoiding codependence and draining situations is to know what's mine and what's theirs. So if it's your body, it's your thoughts, it's your emotions, it's your actions, it's your reactions, then it's yours. If it's somebody else's emotions, it's theirs. So that simple idea of a personal boundary bubble, knowing that you already have that natural protection, that natural end to you and beginning to the next person, that's all you need to be able to be healthy in your interaction. You don't need anything else. You don't need any extra regulations and rules. And so if you think about that and then you know, okay, inside of that boundary bubble, that's all my responsibility to meet my needs when it comes to my body, when it comes to my emotions, when it comes to my thoughts, when it comes to my reactions, that's my responsibility. And guess what? You're the best suited for it. So
right.
The final step to the exercise is to say, okay, if my body, thoughts, emotions, actions, and reactions inside this bubble are mine, what might I add to that list now that I'm thinking about it in this new way? What might I add to that list? What might I take away from that list? And for sure, if it has anything to do with anybody else, it should be off the list, right? Because it's not yours anymore to deal with.
Okay.
And that is like the starting point of, you know, using something as simple as releasing artificial boundaries to be able to create more freedom and more trust in yourself. You know, and then at this point in time, I always get the moms saying, but what about my kids? And what about my boss? Yeah. And what about my husband? And what about this and that? And I say, okay, we go through the same thing. We go through the list again and again and again, and they start to see, oh my goodness, I've been taking on all kinds of stuff that has been weighing me down that's not mine. And no wonder I've had no, you know, I've been trying to set up artificial boundaries. I've been missing the big stuff, and I've been worrying about the small stuff. And then they start to see, wow, just by them making that one shift, they're doing such a service to their families and to their colleagues and friends and everybody. It's not popular at first. Everybody hates you because you stopped worrying about all their stuff. They're like, what's wrong with you? But
right.
Done right from the right place, you know, again, doesn't matter what you do, it's where you are when you do it. From the right place, it actually ends up becoming the saving grace for everybody. Everyone gets feels more free and happy because you've set a different standard for how you interact.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And how we're mostly taught or grow up is that, you know, we don't even know that there is a bubble. And so things are so mixed up around us and meshed together that we don't know which is what's my energy, what's my opinion, what's my feeling, because it just looks a lot like yours, you know, when we're in a relationship or family together. So that's a great way to clarify the bubble. I actually teach a visualization of kind of pressing outward with the bubble so that everyone and everything that isn't you, you know, you kind of get this buffer zone. And you're left with your own clarity bubble, just like you were talking about. And it's very powerful to begin to even, you know yourself and know what you want, know what you feel. So
yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. All right. We got just a couple of minutes left. Is there anything that you want to tell people about? I think you have a podcast that you do. It seemed like.
No, I don't have a podcast. So we were doing some videos, just kind of talking, discussing some of these really radical and unconventional ideas. And we still do it from time to time, but it's not a podcast. But yeah, you can connect with me on LinkedIn or Facebook. The Real Deborah A is my, you know, like username. Or you can send me an email. But yeah, I mean, I'm always open to connection. I'm always open to questions. If you know there's something that I shared today that you have, I'm sure if anyone's listening, there's always follow-up questions, right? After it sinks in for a little bit, they're like, but wait. And then there's a whole bunch of questions that come up. So I'm always happy to answer those. And yeah, I actually wanted to ask you about your, I went to your spoon vendors workshop, and I thought that was really cool. So I wanted to ask you about that. Are you still doing those?
Yeah, I am. And actually, I just did one this Sunday, and that was especially cool. It was just a small group, but all prior spoon vendors, repeat vendors. And so we kind of took it a little bit deeper and explored, you know, okay, now that you've bent the spoon, you know, what does that look like and what other ways can you get into it? But I'm monthly now, I'm going to be leading workshops. The next one is August 30th, which is a Monday. I'm going to try Monday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon Pacific. I'm thinking maybe Sunday afternoon is not a good time for people in general, but we'll see. You know, and actually, I mean, in a crazy way, it touches on a lot of what you're talking about too, about, you know, boundaries and about trusting. There's a lot of trusting yourself. Since we do it in a group, there's trusting that, you know, we're all there to do something that we don't know if we're going to be able to do. And we're doing that together, you know, and the safety of the group, that it's going to be okay whether you bend your spoon or don't bend your spoon. You know, all these different qualities of like feeling your own energy and that everything is connected, you know. So it's much more than just simply let's go bend a spoon. And as you know, I'm not teaching people to stare at a spoon and make it, you know, fall over. We're definitely using our hands, but we're bending spoons. We're starting with spoons that are too thick or stiff or hard to actually bend with physical strength alone. It takes that shift of mind, some understanding, some bringing some focused energy so that you can bend it with your hands, even with easily with your hands where you couldn't bend it at all before. And it's a metaphor, you know, for bending life. It's a metaphor for applying focus and intention and to see how powerful we really are and how we do actually extend, you know, beyond our skin. There is that bubble, that energy, that impact, you know, that we put out into the world. So, yeah. You know, it's kind of deep for just a simple spoon bending thing. And I love doing it because a lot of light bulbs go off for people, you know, get new understandings or just feel super confident, you know, after you bend a spoon, you're going to feel pretty darn good about that. So if anybody's interested, yeah, you can connect with me, you know, on the Not Too Late Show Facebook page, group page, or message me on Facebook, or email me at michashines@gmail.com. I've got a website that is spoonbenderscafe.com. And so if you go there, you can see what all I'm doing, and at the bottom of the page, there's a link to register for the next webinar. So thank you for bringing that up. You know, and it's different for everybody. I mean, the experience that you had was, you know, very different from, you know, what other people, each one had their own aha moments or their own shift. So, yeah, do you remember what it was like, what came up for you?
Yeah, I think it was really interesting because, I knew it was a different, I would say it's like, I call them entry points or, you know, like to access a certain flavor of energetic kind of movement. And I thought it was, I really enjoyed it because it just was for that, you know, whatever it was, 45 minutes or so, it was just really tapping into, you know, parts of me that I never, you know, pretty much lay dormant most of the time. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great experience. It was really also really encouraging to see all the like kids bending all these spoons. I thought that was awesome. So yeah, I definitely thought it was an experience that everyone should have it at least once.
Thank you. We're about to get cut off by the system, so I'm going to say thank you, Deborah, for being here. Thanks everybody for listening. Check you out next time. Or check us out next time, whichever. Thanks, and over and out.
Thanks so much, Miche. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.